Welcome to another episode of Sitting Around Talking Movies. I'm Neil Rosen, joined as always by Bill Bregoli.
That would be me.
And remotely by phone, sitting out somewhere by the beach, is Mr. Bill McCuddy.
Hi. Hold on. Janet, put a little suntan lotion on. You're gonna burn there.
But he's with us. He's with us, and he'll be giving his comments on such movies today as Judy, the Judy Garland biopic starring Renee Zellweger, The Day Shall Come, a supposed satirical look at the FBI with Anna Kendrick. And we'll also talk about Bill McCuddy saw a Luc Besson movie called Anna, which is now on demand. He's going to talk about a recent episode of the Colbert Report, a late show with Colbert, Stephen Colbert, a Netflix show called Unbelievable with Toni Collette. And we're also going to have a recap of the Emmy Awards. And we're going to talk about the Ken Burns new multi-part series that's on PBS. Lots to talk about. Let's start right off with talking about Judy. Okay, so I got to tell you. So Judy Garland, this looks at like the last year of her life, towards the last year or two of her life, when she's a broken down alcoholic mess and she's not doing very well financially. She's in jeopardy of losing custody of her two children. Her star is not what it was when she was at the top of her game at MGM making movies. It's faded and she needs money. So she goes out to, she's offered a five, and nobody's hiring her in the United States. So she's offered a 5-week gig in London and she goes out there to make some money, and they're actually looking forward to having her in London, and she goes off the rails there too. So she's all liquored up, as they say, and she could barely get on stage, but somehow she pulls it together for most, but not all of the performances. There's also flashbacks that look at her as a young Judy Garland when she was on the set of The Wizard of Oz making that movie, which is interesting, which also shows you how the head of that studio, Louis B. Mayer, made her a substance abuser. They wouldn't let her eat food, so her weight wouldn't fluctuate on the set, you know, because it took a few months to film the movie, so she had to be at the same weight. She's
there's a great scene when the young Judy jumps into a swimming pool when everybody tells her not to. And I actually enjoyed some of the flashback scenes just as much as the current stuff with Renee Zellweger. But I have to tell you, the headline here is, for me, is that I see a lot of Renee Zellweger in this performance, and this is getting unbelievable press, and we just did the show on CUNY, and everyone on the panel but me loves Renee in this, and I think she'll probably get an Oscar nomination, but I just want to tell you, if you're waiting to see some transformation of her into Judy Garland, she looks a little like her, and she sounds like her in many places, sings her own songs live. I don't think she sounds exactly
What do you
like
mean
her,
live? She doesn't sing them live in terms of, like, she sings to track. They were recorded in a
studio. No, it wasn't dubbed. She was on set doing the songs live.
Oh.
And, well, which was brave, actually. So,
her
voice.
Bill, no disrespect. Are you really 100% convinced of that? Because I thought the only movie where people, a big budget movie where people sang live was Les Miserables with Hugh Jackman and Anne Hathaway, and I thought that most people, if you don't know, that are listening, if you watch a movie musical, they record the music separately in a studio, and then they're basically lip syncing because of, you know, it's hard to capture the audio with the whole. They lip sync to their own song.
All I know is what the director told me, but I could be wrong.
Well, here's what I know. Okay, first of all, I didn't think she does her own singing as opposed to lip syncing Judy Garland. And you mentioned that,
and
by
she
the way.
Does it live?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because you said that on the television show on our CUNY and PBS All Art show, which will air next Friday on CUNY, and we discuss Judy and a bunch of other stuff, other films. And I was going to my editor, the same exact conversation that we have now. I was going to clip that live thing out because I don't think she has live. And my editor said, no, I think he meant that, like, she's singing it as opposed. So we left it in. But the point is that I think she does a remarkable job as Judy Garland. And I don't think that I was very skeptical going in, saying nobody could sing like Judy Garland, and this is going to be a disaster. And she's phenomenal as Judy Garland. I think she looks like Judy Garland. She has the mannerisms of Judy Garland. And she sounds like Judy Garland. I think it's a phenomenal performance. I do agree with you that she's going to get an Oscar nomination. She might even get an Oscar, win an Oscar. The only time she won a Best Supporting once for Cold Mountain. I think she'll win a bet. She could win for Best Actress. Guaranteed she'll get nominated. I think she's better than the movie. The movie is kind of like okay, mediocre to okay. It only focuses on like that last period of her life. But she's better than the movie, and she makes the movie sing, pun intended. And Lisa Rossman and Mike Sargent, who are on the show that will be on CUNY next Friday, also agree with me that she's great. I think you stand alone there, Bill.
Well, I think if you watched the movie again, you'd see a lot of the same kind of winces and movements and manic tics and stuff that I've seen her do in Jerry Maguire and Bridget Jones and Cold Mountain. And I'm not saying those are bad things. I'm saying that she's doing an interpretation of Judy, but there's, to me, I never lost sight of the fact that Renee Zellweger was on the screen.
I disagree completely, and I didn't even see Renee Zellweger on the screen. All I saw was Judy Garland. And
I do admire that she sang live, not just lip sync. And anyone who wants to go to a featurette on YouTube and watch the director talk about that and how impressed he was is welcome to do it.
Well, you know who agrees with you? And believe it or not, that thought that
almost
Judy
Garland. Everyone usually.
No, nobody agrees with you. But there is one person.
No, usually I'm saying.
Robert Wall did not. Our friend Robert Wall, star of Arliss and such movies as Bull Durham, was in Bull Durham, thinks that she did not really capture the essence vocally of Judy Garland. We've been texting each other back and forth, and he agrees with you, but. Everybody else that I've talked to pretty much unanimously feels that she did a phenomenal performance, and I like the thing.
It's a great performance, but
look, you know what I like?
There's a lot of Renee in it. That's
didn't you like the
beat a dead horse.
Didn't you like the flashback scene? There's a flashback scene with her and Mickey Rooney, and she's kind of like flirting with Mickey Rooney. She says later in the movie that like the first guy that turned me down was Mickey Rooney, and they're going out, they're kids, and they want to get pizza and hamburgers or something, and. Mickey Rooney's chowing down on all this food, and whoever's like, what do you call that lady that's like monitoring young Judy Garland, like won't let her eat any food? She was like her.
A bitch.
Yeah, that she was a bitch. But not supervisor, but I don't know. She was like overseeing.
Guardian or overseer or studio. Yeah, she was the woman.
So she orders a big juicy hamburger, and the lady won't let her eat anything. She says, here, take a pill. That'll take the edge off you being hungry. It was like, it's crazy, you know? And, she just...
No, as I mentioned earlier in this conversation, but you rarely listen, I like the flashbacks as much as the current day stuff.
Well, you didn't listen... Wait a minute. You didn't listen to me. I said... If I'm not mistaken, I said, didn't you like the flashback? Well, yes, I did listen. I didn't know that you said. I thought I referenced pointed that you'd like the flashback.
Coming off the ledge.
All right, what the hell?
I think it's going to, I don't know if it's going to make a lot of money. The other thing that's weird is that after the movie was over, I read that London appearance was a 5-week run, but I don't remember being told that anyplace in the movie. And
that's irrelevant.
I was confused about how long she was going to be there because she keeps fucking up and then she keeps coming back and there's never a sense of, come on, Judy, we just have a couple more performances or we have a couple more weeks or we have a couple more. There's also a very odd thing that happens, which is that she's, and this isn't a spoiler, I mean, she's really beloved in England and everyone can't wait to see her and opening night she does a fine job. And by the third night, they're throwing shit at her on the stage. It's like the audience just completely turns against her. There's no affection for her. And I felt that was a cheat. I felt that was something the filmmakers did to make the movie more interesting. But I can't believe that people were that elated with her one night and rude the next.
I don't know. I like the flashbacks. I think better than the not wasn't present day, the stuff that was set in the late 60s. There's a scene when they go like, Judy, we're having
funny because I didn't really care for the flashbacks.
we're having a birthday party for you today. We've got a cake and we're filming it and it's going to be great. My birthday isn't for 2 months from now. No, I'm sorry. We have it penciled in for today. Your birthday is today. And then they wouldn't let her eat the cake, as they say in Marie Antoinette. They wouldn't even let her eat the cake. Which was just crazy.
I will say in those scenes, the Louis B. Mayer guy is really well written. He says things that seem extremely manipulative and must have been the kinds of things that those guys said to young stars. And he obviously fucks with their head pretty badly because
You're nobody. You're what was your name? You're Francis Gum. You're a nobody. Your mother doesn't even want you.
Right.
And you're never. And you're never delaying.
She is, and you're my favorite. And like,
and you're never delay. You're never delaying one of my films again by jumping in a pool of water, as you referenced earlier, Bill. See, I was listening.
Okay, I'm as stunned as you are, and of course, this audience. Yeah. Hey, we could make this whole thing about Judy.
No, we're moving on. We're moving on. There's another movie called The Day Shall Come. Why don't you tell us? Well, before we do, Bill Bregoli, let's play our game since you didn't see Judy. Any interest in seeing it?
No.
No.
I've saw the trailer, and I kind of agree with Bill McCuddy. It felt like Renee Zellweger. But if it shows up someday and I happen to be having nothing to do, I'll watch it.
Oh, you're not going specific out specially.
No,
to see
I could
movie.
See a drag queen.
Okay.
Do Judy Garland.
All right, Bill, you want to tell everybody
I should mention that a couple of colleagues have said a guy named Jim Bailey, who maybe you'll remember from growing up, but I'd forgotten about. There was a really famous guy impersonator that did Judy, and everybody thought it was the definitive Judy Garland. And I must say, having recently watched some tapes of him, that it's far superior to Renee. But he's mostly forgotten, and I think Renee will get nominated. I don't think she'll win, but I think she may get nominated.
Yeah, we got to see what's coming down in terms of films. Anyway, let's move on. Why don't you tell everybody, Bill, about the movie The Day Shall Come?
This is trying to be a very biting satire about how the FBI or CIA or anybody in Washington can try and lure people into doing acts of terrorism that will then get them arrested. It's a big, big plate to try and accommodate something that clever. And director and writer Christopher Morris, who gave us a movie a couple of years ago called Four Lions, is basically taking an impoverished preacher in Miami and offering him some cash to help his cause. He's not a violent guy, but the CIA is trying to set him up, led by Anna Kendrick. And I love Anna Kendrick in almost anything. I follow her on Twitter. She's an extremely funny person.
Yeah, very clever.
But, they want us to believe that this kind of Homeland Security comedy is based on 100 real stories. And, I wish one of those 100 had been funny, because there are a couple of laugh-out-loud lines in this thing. But for me, it was a misfire, trying to be, like, dark, like Wag the Dog or some of the other like great satires that have been politically based, and this is just not one of them.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that good satire is a very hard thing to pull off, and I think that they were not able to pull this off at all. It was well-intentioned. I think the concept was good, talking about the fact that the FBI, the people that were in this particular unit of the FBI, they need to show whoever in the government that they're catching terrorists, and it's easier, as they say in the tagline, to create a terrorist than to actually, catch one. So they frame this guy who's kind of like, not kind of like, he's insane, and he has a following of like four other people, and they take these guns. And I don't want to go, no, take the guns, and then they frame him for being a terrorist. And I think the concept is...
We should warn people, if they decide to, against our warning, see this thing. It's got a real dark ending.
Yes, it does. Bill, are you on speaker right now? Because your audio level just changed dramatically.
No, I'm right here. I don't know what you're talking about.
Just moved away.
Okay. All right, I'll just pick that up. Why don't you just say that again about the... You want to warn people.
3, 2, and we should warn people who are not being, who will see this no matter what we say, that it, for a comedy, has an extremely dark ending that's, kind of hitting us over the head with a hammer, but, and may in other films might be admired for that, but I'm not a fan.
I was confused. I don't know if you were. So was Lisa Rossman. I was very confused at many points in this movie. They didn't make a lot of things clear. I thought, as you said, I didn't think it was funny. I was bored, and I think they would they tried to hit you over the head with a hammer. It wasn't subtle at all in terms of making their points. And for a satire, it was not a good satire. I would pass on this.
Good point with the hitting you over the head. Yeah.
Were you confused at any point in the movie? Seriously, because Lisa and I.
Yeah. I mean, it's it's got a lot of subplots going on.
Okay.
With a lot of snitches and a lot of double talk, and you know, it's a head full, and it really wants to be funny and not light and breezy, because the material is heavy handed and the topic is, you know, kind of brutal, but on the whole, I think it's just a misfire.
All right. So Bill Brigoli, who hasn't seen this movie either, any interest?
No.
Okay, there you go. All right.
By the way, we should mention Jim Gaffigan plays a skinhead, and when you think of skinheads, the first guy you think of is Jim Gaffigan.
Yes, you sure do.
Good point.
All right. Anyway, we got other movies to talk about, but let's take a little break and talk about the Emmy Awards, which were on TV last Sunday. And my favorite part of the Emmy Awards was a little bit Stephen Colbert.
When it was over.
When Stephen Colbert and Jimmy Kimmel came on stage, and they basically were going to hear a little part of it. They said this.
How's the old no host thing going?
What a dumb idea.
What a joke.
So stupid. You know what has a host? Applebee's has a host.
Yeah, I thought...
So that's funny.
Yeah, they were funny, and one of them should have hosted the show, basically.
Well, you know, one of the reasons Fox didn't have a host was that they don't have a host. They don't have a late-night person they can slot in. There is no person like Colbert.
Right, if it's on ABC, Kimmel
hosts. There's nobody to promote.
Right. I mean, a few years ago, they had Andy Samberg, but his show's gone to NBC.
That's right. It's always...
Mike Feuerstein had a late-night show there.
Right, it's always the person that's starring that has one of their TV shows.
Fox hasn't got that, which is why they opened with Homer Simpson.
Yeah, that's funny. Well, that's interesting. You know, the show is the lowest rated Emmys in, was it ever? Was it ever?
Ever. Last year was ever, and this year's even one-third less of last year.
Oh, my God. So why are people not tuning into the Emmys?
6.9 million viewers.
Why do people just not care? What do you think, Bill?
Now the audience is spread over streaming and cable and everything else. I think that's part of it. But I will say this, Neil, you know who Phoebe Waller-Bridge is now, don't you?
No.
A few weeks ago, you were like, who's she? She's hosting Saturday Night Live.
And the one from Fleabag you talking about? Oh, yeah.
Well, now you know.
Well, yes, Fleabag. And I'm like, I never watched Fleabag, but it's won like all the awards. And I'm like, maybe I should check out Fleabag. And I also want to check out that miniseries. And I'm sorry, I can't remember the name, but it's about the Central Park Five, the kids who were wrongly convicted. But that looks very... I've been meaning to watch that, and that was winning
Ava
a
DuVernay.
Bunch of... What's that?
Ava DuVernay.
Yeah. So that looked very good. And, you know, I thought it was going to be a Mrs. Maisel sweep in the beginning, because the first two awards, you know, Tony Shalhoub won for Best Supporting Actor in a Comedy, for his work on that, and then Alex Borstein won for Best Supporting Actress, which the second year in a row, for her work on that show, but it didn't really, and Henry Winkler did not win. I thought Henry Winkler would win. I thought he was going to be like the new Kelsey Grammer. You have any thoughts?
I think one of the things that people are tired of is that the Emmys seem to give awards, no matter how many years the show's been off the air. Didn't Laugh-In win something the other night? I mean, they don't seem topical. I mean, the idea that Mad Men wasn't nominated, but Veep and Game of Thrones and the other issue for me is that the television audiences are so splintered and seeing so many things in so many different places that there's no consensus of, oh, let's tune in and see how our show does, because
no, I don't agree. I don't agree. I think Game of Thrones fans want to see if it wins. I think that you still have that. And by the way, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, had she won, and she did not, she would have won. She would have broken the record for all-time person with Emmy wins, and because she was tied with Cloris Leachman, and she did not win. So there were some surprises, you know.
Well, there might have been surprises, but there was no audience, which means your theory about people who watch Game of Thrones tuning in, I don't think they care. Game of Thrones is over. If you're a fan, I just mentioned.
I mean, there are other shows like tuning in for Mrs. Maisel, see if that's going to win. Tuning in to see if Barry is going to win, you know, or whatever other show that you're following. You know,
but nobody did. So when you're asking about why nobody's watching, that's what I'm telling you. I think that streaming audiences watch something in binges, They're over with it. They move on to the next thing, and they don't care.
Well, I was glad that Jason Bateman won a directing award. And the show didn't win, but he won a directing an episode of Ozark, which I think is I've mentioned this is a great
and
series.
And that young blonde woman who's so sensational.
Yeah.
What is her name?
Yeah, what is her name? But she's great. But my daughter actually knows her, and so she's going to be really annoyed. But she hasn't listened to this podcast anyway. But she knows her. Yeah, she's very talented, that girl that won from Ozark, who plays the redneck partner in crime to Jason Bateman. She's terrific. And she was also on The Americans. She was on there for a number of episodes too. So she's without the Southern accent. She's terrific. So there were a couple of things I was happy about. But yeah. So I'll close out the Emmys
by saying Billy Porter was a big win also, and he gave a nice speech, and that was historically important. But
I missed that.
You know, the next day, two or three highlights, and that's it. We played the one funny line from two guys who didn't host, talking about why they might or might not have been a host. I mean, this is all evidence to me that shows like this are just not necessary anymore.
You know, you broke up there, Bill, since you're on the phone. Who did you say gave a
Billy
nice
Porter
speech?
For Pose, I think. Probably is.
Got it. You know,
not a show you're side for every week. But.
So let me ask you this. I don't think they'll ever take the Emmys rotate from network to network, and I don't think they'll ever take the show off primetime and network despite the horrible ratings, because it's really a stroke for them. I mean, you know, they want to win.
Well, they get the network who's showing it gets to pump up their upcoming shows. That's it. It exists as a vehicle.
But if nobody's watching, who cares, though?
Well, it's still one way they can promote their shows.
No, but I think the ego, maniacal aspect of it, of like, look at this, we just won. And, you know, I just don't think they would take the show off prime time. What do you think, Bill Brugger?
Well, one thing going for it is it's a super cheap show to produce, as are all awards shows.
Really?
So the downside isn't that great.
Well, they just show up.
Yeah.
Nobody pays for the rights for this show. It's all not right. Like Dick Clark Productions paying for the Golden Globes, which, by the way, I think does actually a better job of rewarding up-and-coming shows,
all right,
TV shows.
All right, speaking of TV, so I started watching this Ken Burns multi-part series on country music, you know? And like all Ken Burns long multi-part PBS documentary series, too long but very comprehensive and good. So, you know, I was watching one the other day, you know, an older one that I had never seen on Prohibition. And again, I don't know, eight parts or something on Prohibition. Like 2 hours. And I'm saying to myself, and I was very interested. I caught it right first, episode one, you know, okay, watch the first like hour. And I'm like, this is interesting. And then he starts going off on a tangent. And I'm going, you know, 2 hours on Prohibition is enough for me. I'd like to see a 2-hour comprehensive thing on the entire history of Prohibition in America, and I'd be fine. I don't need to sit through, you know, 16 hours of this thing. And
watch the trailer then.
You know, and the same thing with, I mean, is it well done? It's extraordinarily well done, but it's like more like a textbook or something to show a classroom, you know? It's like, give me 2 hours and I got it.
Well, it is on PBS.
Yeah. I mean, and the country music thing, I mean, I'm very interested in early country music, like Hank Williams, who I think is phenomenal. I mean, he's one of the only people in the Country Music Hall of Fame and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He influenced so many rock and rollers. And I watched that, but then they go off onto some tangent again. But he's got unlimited time, so it doesn't matter.
Your ride is showing up. Listen, about country music that they talked about on the episode this week is that people like Garth Brooks and Trisha Yearwood and the multi-million CDs that they sold for a while before the whole market started to sort of ebb and splinter was pretty remarkable. It as a genre, there was a time when it outsold rock and roll.
Is that true? I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm fascinated by little pieces of information like that. By the way, all of those country stars, they sing their songs live, Neil.
You wouldn't be getting little pieces of information from.
But you
if
might
you watch
not
the
believe
series.
That, so you better go look it up.
You'd be watching. You'd be watching a Barbara like an hour and a half on Barbara Mandrell probably in this series. You know what I'm saying? It's like nothing is briefly mentioned. You said you like little facts like that. You got to watch a long thing to get to those little facts. But look, it's extremely well done, just very long. I think with all those Ken Burns things, and then we'll go to the next topic. You know, if you're really, really interested in the subject matter, like Rick Burns, his brother, did a multi-part series on New York, the history of New York from, you know, the Native Americans all the way up to the present. And then he did an additional episode when the World Trade Center went down, like a couple of years later. And I love New York history, so I was just fascinated by every one of those two-hour episodes. But I think if, you know, you're a casual, just to mention, you know, jazz fan, let's say, and, you know, I don't know if you're going to want to watch 18 hours of Ken Burns jazz. I don't know. That's just my theory. Anyway, Bill McCuddy, tell me about this Luc Besson movie, Anna, which came and went in theaters like in 2 weeks, if that long. And is now
it's now out on streaming, lots of platforms, and it's very much in the Besson kind of it's like a movie you liked called Hannah with the same name with just H's on either side. And basically, it's about a woman who is recruited. She's Russian. She comes to Paris. She pretends to be a model, and she starts assassinating people for the Russian government. Cillian Murphy's in it as a CIA guy. So it's kind of Atomic Blonde meets The Professional, and
La Femme Nikita.
Now the actress that stars in it she's fine. I mean, I think this thing gets like 35% or 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Is it worth seeing on?
I thought it was completely enjoyable, and I recommend it.
Okay,
it's got some good skin in it for Bill, so okay.
And it's got a Femme Nikita kind of like vibe too. You were saying before we started recording the show.
Yeah, I think and this woman Sasha Luss, Luss, if I'm saying it correctly. The fight scenes are well choreographed. She kicks ass, and it's just good fun.
All right, so you wanted to talk, Bill McCuddy, about this, which I have recorded on my DVR, and I haven't seen it yet. This Colbert episode that was on recently.
Oh, yeah, he was talking to another movie that's just out on all platforms is Yesterday, the Danny Boyle.
Which I loved. I love that movie.
Doesn't have the Beatles involved in it. And so Colbert had Sir Paul McCartney on the other night, and the topic of the song Yesterday came up, and McCartney said that he heard that in a dream, woke up, started singing it for other people or playing the music for other people and saying, has anyone heard this before? And they were all like, no. And so about 2 weeks into it, he goes, this must be an original song. And he got together with John, and then they obviously put that song together. And out of that, Colbert was like, well, there was just a movie called Yesterday. Did you see it? And he said that he and Nancy snuck into the back row of a movie theater and watched it maybe out here in the Hamptons where he's got a place, but perhaps in the city. They'd offered to screen it for him at a screening room, and he said no, he really wanted to see it with people. And he quite enjoyed it. They didn't talk about it, and I guess for people who haven't seen it now, we shouldn't talk about one of the big surprises near the end of the movie.
No, don't talk about that, did McCartney reference...
You're going to, and you're listening to this podcast, there is a really cool thing that happened.
McCartney reference point the fact, was he asked at all to possibly appear in the film? Did that come up at all in the discussion on the Colbert show?
Well, he talked basically about how much he enjoyed it, and Colbert didn't push for too many details except that, you know, he still sees John in his dreams. And it was just it's on YouTube. It's a delightful exchange.
I have two questions for you.
Stories you've never heard from McCartney.
Well, I have a story for you and a question for you. The story is that it's an old story that when McCartney first wrote the song Yesterday, you were talking about the origin of the song, he didn't have the lyrics. He had the melody, and he just put dummy lyrics in there, and it was scrambled eggs. Instead of Yesterday.
Yeah, that's an old story. Right, I've heard that. I've heard that before, and I think that's true. They have acknowledged that.
Right. And the question for you, I forgot what I was going to ask you. Did McCartney...
McCartney sings live, if that's what you want to
know. No, I wanted to know about the fact that Colbert tapes his show in the Ed Sullivan Theater, which is where the Beatles rocketed to fame in America with that appearance. And that show was recorded in the Ed Sullivan Theater, and I wanted to know if that was mentioned at all during that spot that you
were. No, it's a great question. I only saw the one segment where they were talking about the Danny Boyle film, so he did two segments with him, and it's probably likely that topic did come up. I mean, it would be remiss by its absence. So,
although Letterman used to do his show from that same theater, and McCartney did talk extensively about that. There was a special once on TV with Ringo and McCartney where they returned to the Ed Sullivan Theater with John Lennon's, with Yoko Ono and George Harrison's widow. And McCartney also performed many years later on Letterman out in front of the theater on top of the thing that, you know, that says...
marquee.
Yeah,
was
exactly.
Was it on top of the marquee or did they go to the roof like Abbey Road? I can't remember.
No, top of the thing. What's this Netflix show called Unbelievable with Toni Collette that you've been watching?
Well, it's based around a serial killer working in the Southwest, Colorado, Arizona, and how these guys who are smart about it don't repeat the same crime in any two jurisdictions. So it takes a long time, almost 8 years, for a couple of cops to put it together. One of them is played by Toni Collette, and I want to tell people this is going to start out kind of slowly for you. The first victim is the girl from Booksmart that was...
Caitlin Dever.
The friend, and she's really good. But it starts a little slowly, and by the time Toni Collette kicks in the third episode, I'm up to the fourth one now. It's really absorbing and good, so I recommend it.
What's opening next week, folks?
Joker. That's it.
Joker, which they haven't shown, to my knowledge, to practically anybody yet. What's up with that?
Well, they showed it at every friggin' film festival that we weren't at.
Yeah,
but we are going to a film festival.
Yeah, about it. It's not because it's bad, Neil. It's because they don't want it to peak early, I feel.
Well, Gemini Man.
And I'm seeing The Irishman tomorrow as part of the New York Film Festival, and we will have that out at the Hamptons Film Festival over Columbus Day weekend, so...
We're going to be
from talking about it until Monday, but we can talk about it on the next.
Well, we're going to be broadcasting
or tease it a little bit, and then talk more completely about it during the Hamptons Film Festival, where we'll be live as we are every year. I think in the back of the 1770 House. And
when you say live, Bill, do you mean live like Judy Garland singing? Renee Zellweger singing.
Robert De Niro sings live in the film.
Singing, and you know, the other day I was watching the as we mentioned on the podcast last week, I was watching the, and I finished it up. I only watched the first half. Now I finished it up. The Comedy Central roast of Alec Baldwin with Robert De Niro, and I'm watching that. And then right afterwards, like maybe an hour or two afterwards, they had the Robert De Niro movie on this movie channel, Movies with an exclamation point. They show a lot of great. I was watching Injustice for All on there. I was the other night. I mean, they have great movies on this channel. So
yeah, but they fuck up the aspect ratio. That's in some weird 4:3 thing, isn't it? Isn't it squeezed?
I don't know. They have a film noir night where I told you I saw that thing, The House on, what is that San Francisco movie? The House on Telegraph Hill. But anyway, they had Bang the Drum Slowly on, which doesn't hold up, by the way. I have to tell you, it just really does not. But I'm looking at De Niro present day, and then I'm looking at him from like early 1970s, you know, and I'm going, wow. I mean, we all get old, but it's like the guy's practically unrecognizable except for the mole on his cheek.
Well, it's funny you bring that up because The Irishman, obviously, as we've talked ad nauseum about, they spent $100 million making everybody look younger. And I've finally seen a picture of what De Niro is supposed to look like when he's in his 20s.
Me
and he
too.
Looks like he's 40.
Well, I didn't know that. I saw that.
Thing in the new trailer. Have you guys both seen
Yeah,
the new
it's at the end of the trailer. But I don't know. There was nowhere in that trailer that said to me that he was supposed to be in his mid-20s. I just assumed that he was supposed to be in his late 40s in that shot.
No, that's the way our colleague Jeffrey Wells is reporting it, who wrote a big piece about it today at HollywoodElsewhere.com. And, you know, he shows the picture as a still. It goes by pretty quickly in the trailer. We look at it in a still. It really is kind of De Niro looking like he's in his 30s, or as you said, maybe 40s. But... my concern about The Irishman, and then we'll wrap it up, is that there's been so much hype for this thing and so much expectation, and I'm afraid that it can only fail in some people's minds because this whole thing about making actors look younger and spending so much money to do it seems kind of a little gross.
Well, what did you think of?
I hope that doesn't overshadow.
Well,
what
did you think of
an otherwise good movie?
In Captain Marvel, it's the same process where they made the same technology where they made Samuel L. Jackson look very young, opposite Brie Larson.
They've done it with Michael Douglas in Ant-Man.
Bill Bregoli, what did you think of Samuel Jackson's appearance in?
It was a little off-putting.
Was it off-putting because you know he looks much older?
Or
was
no, it just looked weird.
Well, if you didn't know who Samuel,
still think it looked weird.
You would,
yeah.
If you had no idea, it never had seen a Samuel L. Jackson.
Right.
It did look a little angularly off. I think. What did you think, McCuddy?
I don't remember.
You didn't see. I bet you didn't see. I don't think you saw Captain Marvel, or did you?
No, I did. I just don't. I wasn't right. Focused on that.
Well, we'll see. We'll see. You know, and Gemini Man opens next week
the
too.
The tractors, yeah. Well, but.
With Will Smith.
Will Smith looks young anyway. I mean, detractors say it's the eyes and the mouth that give this technology away because those are the two things they can't change. So we'll see.
Well, we'll see. Anyway, Bill McCuddy. By the way, go to the Hampton Film Festival. If you want, I say this every year. We're going to be, as Bill McCuddy said, and Bill Bregoli said, we're out every year. We'll be out there interviewing the stars from the movies that are out there. But I have to tell you, I've seen Oscar movies, or certainly Oscar-nominated movies, almost every year. It's quiet. It's not the craziness of seeing a movie in New York. You can go to see a movie, and it's just very mellow, chill. And they have tremendous films out there. And it runs Columbus Day weekend.
Yeah, wherever you are in the country, please fly to East Hampton, New York.
Do you know that we have listeners? I was looking at our stats. We have listeners we have a couple of listeners in China, and we have a bunch of listeners in Great Britain. How do you like that one?
Around talking movies must translate to something pornographic in Chinese.
I don't think so.
The only possible explanation.
Hey, Bill McCuddy, what do we do every week on the show?
we sit around by my pool.
Is that where you are? Are you poolside?
Yeah,
really?
Thank
God.
Movies so you don't have to.
That's right. That's right. And Bill Bregoli is on Instagram. You can reach him at Bill Bregoli,
I believe. That's it.
Right. And we can reach Bill McCuddy at what?
At Bill McCuddy.
That's right. And you can reach me at Neil Rose and Apples. And again, as I said, we'll talk about it next week. But we've got a TV show on the air next Friday night, so we'll talk about that too. And thanks for sitting around talking movies with us. We will sit around talking movies again with you next week.